You are now listening to the Black Girl Nerds Podcast.
Five, six, seven, eight. Holla, boys and girls, it's the BGN. Coming from the Marvel world to the DC friends. All the way from Hollywood to the PCN. She defends everyone from sleazy men. Won't apologize for spitting Shonda rhymes. The space that we make is never colonized. Talking games and movies and actors.
Word? Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds. Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds. Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds. Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds.
Welcome to the Black Girl Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Angelica, and joining me is my co-host, Stacy. Blessed day, Stacy. We are here to break down episode 7 of The Handmaid's Tale, entitled Shattered. Give me your thoughts on this episode.
This episode was fantastic. And it, first of all, may the Lord open and yes. Let the revolution begin.
Yes, yes.
We are going in this episode, but it also revealed my toxic trait, which apparently is living for Commander Warden.
Toxic.
Thank you, Commander Warden. You know, you're terrible, but I like you a lot. So I don't know where to put that. It's kind of one of those double-edged sword things where it's like, this is exactly what Serena deserves because this is exactly what Serena thinks she deserves. And so we'll get into all of that. But yeah, this episode was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. It definitely laid down the foundation. This is when like the roller coaster starts to like head up and it starts to make its way down. But end of this episode, we're definitely going down and it's going to be a ride. So yeah, I enjoyed the momentum in this episode for sure. So yeah, I enjoyed it. Let's just jump right into it. So we're basically where we left off the previous episode. Surprise. June is still in the pantry, trapped in the pantry with Nick. She is reeling from the realization that Nick betrayed her, revealed Mayday's plans, and potentially cost the lives of the women at Jezebel's by talking to Commander Wharton, right? And then we do cut to Jezebel's, where Janine's sitting at her dresser. She's once again looking at her picture of Angela / Charlotte, or the picture she drew. And guardians just rush to the dressing room. They, you know, corral all the Jezebels into bathroom stalls. It does not look good. They aim their guns at them. You're like, oh my gosh, this is it. And, you know, by chance, by luck, or planned out, Janine is pulled from the group of women. And as she's being pulled away and screaming, we see the Jezebels executed systematically. So very tough scene to watch. It just evoked a lot of feelings for me. What did you take away from that opening sequence?
Do we think that they killed the Jezebels because they thought they had something to do with the plot, or just because they're like, well, what else are we going to do with them?
Well, I do touch on the reasoning for why they were executed a little down the line. So I don't know if I want to say just yet, but it does go both ways, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that was rough. I was so sad. Janine has been through so much, and this is the type of thing that would send her right back into that spiral. Mm-hmm. And I had an inkling of why she was saved, and unfortunately that inkling was said to be true. So yes. Yeah, we'll get there.
Yes. So you know, then we see Serena finally leaving with Noah, right? Because the plan was to take him for a walk to get Wharton out of the house. So they leave. And then June finally emerges from the pantry and she's at a loss for words. Like, she doesn't have a lot to say right now. And so Nick obviously is trying to fill the space, like fill the silence. So he reassures her that Janine was taken and he'll find out where she was taken to. He explains that Wharton really just wanted Jezebel shut down. He always looked at it as immoral. You know, he's been working on getting it shut down. down for years. And so Nick is like, look, I told him the girls had nothing to do with it, right? They had nothing to do with the resistance. They had nothing to do with the plans. And he really truly did not think that Wharton would follow through with killing the girls. And June's like, are they dead? And he's like, yeah, I just didn't think he would go that far. But we see, like, as great as Wharton might come across, he does have a very dark side to him. And June is just shocked at this point. She's just like, you know what? Just take me home.
One thing that I loved about the scene is when June comes out, they have that idyllic view of the ocean and in this beautifully appointed house. And June sees basically what has really happened to Serena, like during the day, how good she has it. And that definitely comes into play later in the episode. But her kind of being back in that situation with someone that she thought she could trust, who ultimately betrayed her. I think it was just insult to injury, but it was also kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back. Like she was just done. She's just like, take me back. Like, okay, we lost this one. Get me out of here.
So much for the romantic evening they had, Nick had planned to
It
spend
was
with her.
dirty with, yeah. Well, we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah, I thought I was just like, oh, well, how things have changed so quickly. And someone had tweeted, Canu Stop said, just watched the newest episode of Handmaid's Tale. So talking about the last episode. They gave me so much June and Nick romance just to snatch it away from me, like in all caps.
Yeah,
Like, yes, that
I
was
know the shippers are mad.
it's that relationship was doomed, right? No, Bella had to choose between Edward and Jacob. She ultimately chooses Edward. So, I mean, Jacob had never had a chance. Oh, so that's kind of how it played out for me. I'm like, oh, there goes. So they're en route back to the border. June at this point is so pissed off. She can't even drive the rest of the way with him. She's like, let me out. And he, she gets out the car, she starts walking to the border, he chases after her and he tells her, like, I did everything for you. I risked my life for you to save your husband, to save your friends. I killed guardians, including a 19-year-old boy that was just doing his job. You pretend like I'm not a commander in Gilead until it suits you. And June's taken aback by that because whether she wants to hear it or not, he is right. But he's just kind of using it and manipulating it against her. And she's like, you know what? I never pretended anything. You gave up those girls at Jezebel to save yourself. And Nick is like, okay. And you still love me for it. And she's like, you know what? You're just like the rest of them. And she walks off. So that seemed to be very final as far as their romance is concerned. She sees him for who he is, and he kind of sees her.
I mean, she's it's almost Stockholm, you know. It's almost that thing where she had they trauma bonded, and a trauma bond is very strong, but it's also very fragile at the same time. And so I think this might be, of course, the beginning of the end, but honestly, I think the only thing that's really gonna set them apart is A, if she gets Hannah back. Or B, one of them dies. Like they just have this weird kind of connection. But I was so annoyed with Nick during this because he was never going to tell her. He was literally going to take her. They were going to run off together and in his mind and go to Paris or go to Maggiano's or Carletta's or whoever and, you know, just kind of live the separate life. And that was what it was in his head. So then for him to be like, well, you know the kind of person I am, and da da da. And it's like, you know, I had to shoot a 19-year-old boyfriend. No, you didn't. You had other options. If you would have taken a second to think about what you were doing, you did not need to shoot him in the face and then later smother him in the hospital. That wasn't because of June. That was because of you. And so yeah, it's there's a conversation I'll come up later with Rita that really expands on it more. But this, I was just like, Nick, what are you doing? What are you doing? So, yeah.
Yep, mask off. So we then cut to Aunt Lydia, so she obviously is hurt about what happened. So she goes to the dressing room. She's sitting at the aftermath. She's seeing all the blood on the floor. You know, for all she knows, Janine is dead. So, and she picks up like the bloody drawing of Angela slash Charlotte, and she you know, holds it to her chest, and she's just weeping because everything that she wanted for these women, right? Her plans were to get some, you know, the former handmaids that work there to be retired, you know, caregivers in the fertility center. So everything she's worked for and her precious girl, Janine, is gone. That was hard to watch. You know, sometimes you do feel for Aunt Lydia because she really does love these women. Her methods are one thing, but you know, there is love there.
Well, it does feel like we get so close to Aunt Lydia actually questioning, is this the right thing? You know, and this bond with Janine has made her more open to being more lenient or trying to find ways to not be so awful. And now, without Janine, you know, she seems just kind of despondent, like, why even try? And so it'll be interesting to see how she continues to kind of develop in the face of this news.
Yeah, and for those that have read the Testaments, this starts to explain things a bit,
As the, yeah.
for her position. So, we go back to May Day. June walks in, you know, Lucas like, "Oh my gosh, are you okay? Like, did you hear what happened?" And June's like, "Yeah, I heard. Why did they find out?" Nick knew. Well, how did Nick know? I told him I thought I could trust him, and Luke is just disgusted. Like, you trusted a commander in Gilead? He doesn't care about the resistance. He doesn't want them to win. The only thing he cares about is you. And you act like he's some hero because of it. You act like I don't see it. And June says, like, well, what do you want me to do? And he's like, don't be in love with a freaking Nazi. How about that? Which is echoes what her mother said to her before she left, right? Like, what are you doing?
I think this is the first time that June thinks of him as a Nazi, finally, where she's like, oh, he really is one of the bad guys, or at least he's in a position where he can act as a bad guy. It's helping me because, you know, he's helping me, but he could very easily not. And I don't think that that was ever an option to her before. One thing that kind of bugged me with this exchange is like, when she just kind of froze and was like, you know, I told him, but I'm like, girl, tell him like what happened. Like, he was the only one you thought you could trust because you were between a rock and a very hard place, you know. But, it also is part of, you know, June just kind of making decisions and not really considering that they won't go her way. So.
So we next cut to Rita, who meets with Nick, right? She
Ooh.
also has an interesting exchange with him. And she's like, you know, what's going on with June? Is she okay? And, you know, Nick is kind of just giving Jon Snow, just very dark and brooding, you know, like staring at the wall, like on the couch, just real quiet. And he's like, yeah, she's safe. And then Rita's, you know, super optimistic and sweet. And she's like, okay, I'm sure you guys are going to see each other again. Don't worry. And Nick is like, nah, we're not going to see each other again. She doesn't want to see me. She thinks I'm a monster. And then Rita's like, no, you're a good man. He says, no, I'm not a good man when she's not around. Like, without her, I'm nothing, which makes me sad to think that. Like, I'm always someone that's like, you have to be secure with yourself. If someone else has to make you something, then you need to do some work. So she reminds him, like, hey, we were friends long before June came around. Remember that. I know you. And he's like, no, let's be real, Rita. You and I are scared of each other, right? They were both working for the Waterfords. We would have dined each other out at any point to save ourselves. So, like, cut the crap, basically. And she's just like, wait a second. Like, you can choose to do the right thing. You know, I'm counting on you. And he was like, I'm in Gilead. I'm a commander. I don't get to choose. And he tells her, you know, the only thing that I've learned is the only person you can count on is yourself. So now here, Rita, who was counting on Nick to help her smuggle her family out of Gilead, this is the whole point that she's there, is now telling her, my heart's broken, whatever, I'm over this, and I don't really care about what happens to you and your family. Like, figure it out. And so now this turns, in some ways, Rita against him.
I think I don't know. I didn't necessarily see it as being like the end all be all of that conversation. I think Rita has a lot more gumption than that. And I think that regardless of what Nick says, she's like, no, I do know you, you know, and because she says, how about since then, since you've become a better person, you know, we would have been friends. And he's, you know, he's in his
He
feelings.
is in feelings.
But the thing that got me with this is he said, in Gilead, everyone has to look out for themselves. And I thought it was so interesting he didn't say in New Bethlehem, that he still knows that he is still a product of that environment, that he has been shaped by that environment. And honestly, so has Rita, so has June. And it's always just going to be this thing that kind of plunges them to the bottom. But I think he saw June as his buoy, even if it's just morally, you know, something to kind of rise him back to the surface. But then he didn't know how to do that without being awful in some way. You know, it was just a very strange exchange. Because I agree. I think the idea is to always be self-sufficient. You know, it's the whole thing about, you know, put the mask on yourself first before you help someone with theirs. And he just seemed like he was like, I'm going to take the mask from someone else and put it on you, June. And then I'm going to take it from someone else and then put one on me. And then we'll jump out of the plane. You know, it's just this weird, it's such a weird kind of oxymoronic thing that he does. But it honestly be kind of typical of someone who is a Nazi that doesn't see themselves as a Nazi, or rather doesn't want to be.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it just speaks to the fact that Nick never really had his own identity. He was always, he was raised by a very strong mother. His father left. He was looking for a parental figure, guidance. That's when he found the Sons of Jacob, latched on to Commander Waterford. When Waterford was gone, it was him and Lawrence. When Lawrence was gone, now it's him and Wharton. Like, he doesn't have an identity. He's trying. And then obviously everything is tied to June, his happiness, his reason for being is all June, June, June. So he doesn't have June anymore. So now he's going back to what he knows, Gilead, right? Wharton. Like, this is what I was bred for, or what I was made for. And so, people like that are very easily influenced, and it can absolutely be radicalized. And, hence why we have people in the far right or even the far left. And so, he's just an example of someone that just get it together. You weak in the knees, stand up. Rita leaves, and then we cut to the next scene, which is Serena basking in the glow of her bridal shower, which has been thrown for her by the wives of Boston. She's initially pleased, right? Because she's being doted on. They're all like, oh, they're so happy for her. And then Naomi kind of makes this snide comment, like, oh, I hope you got your dress made at like Gildean's. I forget the exact name, right?
Love that, Gilead Dean.
Gildean's rather than some like tacky shop in New Bethlehem. And that kind of like pokes at Serena because she's very proud of New Bethlehem. And she says, oh, no, it's different there. And, but I get it. And then the wives are like, so what's it like? Tell us. And she says, it's a little odd, it's a little strange, but we maintain the same values as Gilead proper. Then one of the wives is like, well, what about all the returning refugees? Do they follow the same values? And Serena's like, yes. And she's like, well, that's odd considering they're unsupervised. And Serena's like, well, it's peaceful. They're just happy to be back home with their family. They've been reunited with their loved ones. And then Serena tries to turn the attention to Naomi. It's like, your husband, these are part of his plans. He's the reason for all the success of New Bethlehem. And then another wife is like, well, my husband thinks that his ideas are too radical. And another wife goes, well, my husband thinks it's too reckless. And then another wife starts to jump in, and Serena's like, wait a second, what do you think? What's reckless about, coming together as a community in devotion to God? And she challenges the wives to have their own hopes and dreams for Gilead, not just an extension of their husbands. And then she's like, look, I'm opening up this fertility center in New Bethlehem, and it's going to bring more children. That's the whole purpose of Gilead. And the women are like, the current system is fine. It's working. And Serena's like, well, there's not going to be any handmaids in New Bethlehem. And they're like, oh, Oh, absolutely not. They're like, well, yeah, they're going to be retired. They're going to be working at a facility center. And they're, Don Yomi's like, oh no, just give me my child. God bless you. Move on, right? Just so dismissive and so like having no respect for the women that brought her own daughter into the world. And Serena defends the handmaid. She's like, these are holy vessels.
Well,
These
she says,
women.
move them on to what?
Yeah, like where do you want them to go? They carried your children. Should they not have a retirement? Where should they go? And the women are like, I mean, that's for our husbands to figure out. But I'm so glad you put so much thought into this. Thank you for your consideration. Does anyone want tea? Like they just completely like push her off.
There is something so interesting and so insidious about, because we talk about radicalizing people. This is the thing that is probably going to radicalize Serena. She wants so badly for her vision to get through, and when she can't even get the wives to be fully on her side, she's like, oh, something drastic has got to happen. When she asks them, like, what are your hopes and dreams of for the future of Gilead? And there's just silence. It's just like, ugh. Like I, as a woman, I'm supposed to have hopes and dreams. What do you mean? What are you saying? Is that blasphemous, husband? Are you here? It was so knowing that they then also do gossip amongst themselves, and it also kind of showed that they probably keep Serena out of that. That Serena, especially after Commander Waterford died and the way he died, even though that's the time they should be bringing her into the fold, I think it gave them the chance to kind of separate her even more. And so she's finally saying, like, oh, we're not aligned. We're not aligned, and we got to figure out a way to make this happen. God, and for Naomi, of all people, to be like, the system works. And but then hating handmaids, and I'm like, that's a huge part of your system. Like, what do you mean? So yeah, that this scene was everything. I was like, there's so much subtext.
Yeah, and it goes back to like how does Serena come into Gilead? She helped build it, right? She was one of the architects, whether people want to admit it or not. She helped kind of like promote this traditional movement. And then of course she had to take a step back because the role of a wife in Gilead is just to obey. So she's never been quite like the rest of the wives, even though she might have been accepted. But now it's even more obvious because of the freedoms that she's been given by Wharton, how she's nothing like the other wives. So she goes back home and she's frustrated, right? So Wharton's like, oh, I just got news about our new house in Boston. Like everything's like shining up nicely. And Serena's pissed off. She's like, I met with the wives. They mocked me. They dismissed me. They think that our ideas are stupid. They don't respect us. And Wharton's like, oh, well, they're going to learn to respect us. Okay, you're the wife of a high commander or soon to be wife. And then Serena's like, okay, well, I think we will be respected more if we have like a proper wedding, right? Like just it's kind of funny, even within this world, she's a girl that wants to have a big giant wedding and she wants her husband to pay for it, right? Like, well, we'll have a proper wedding. And so he's like, okay, yeah, we can have this grand thing. Can't have it in rinky dink New Bethlehem. Let's do it in Boston. Let's get the entire community involved. We're gonna, have the commanders there, the guardians there, Martha's, Akano families, handmaids, everybody. And then my mind's like, ooh. Ooh, ooh, ooh. You idiot. And then, he gives her the green light to plan the wedding. So I'll stop there if you have any thoughts on that bright idea.
This is where I realized my toxic trait of loving Commander Wharton.
You would have folded immediately.
Immediately, he came in saying, oh, we're looking for a house in Boston that's big enough for our needs, but not too gaudy or like not too overly lavish. And I'm like, sir, you are home and garden in a commander's box. Like, I love him so much. And then he was like, which of the wives were mocking you? And she was like, all of them. Like, I can't be one, like,
I
because
can't
otherwise we
single
might end
them.
up disappearing in the middle of the night.
We're
Commander does not play.
right.
He has a plan and he sticks to it. And God dang it, I respect that. However,
Stacy,
I
you would have
know.
been gone. Stacy, you would have been gone.
Oh, it would have been all. I'm like, he was just misunderstood. He didn't get my is. I don't know. But I adore, like, those scenes back to back were everything. And seeing Serena's gears just grind and grind and be like, handmaids.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. And oh, so good.
Yeah,
So
right,
good.
'cause they're the face of her movement, right? This is a way for her to push, maybe not her propaganda, but her ideas at a national level for these women to see like how important handmaids are. But on the other hand, as someone that's thinking like the resistance, I don't know, but we'll get into it later on. So,
Yeah.
Aunt Lydia returned to the Red Center. Obviously, she's still very upset. I'm assuming she's coming back from Jezebel's. And she's greeted by Aunt Phoebe. Now, unfortunately, I cannot find who this actress was. So we will
Darcy Carden.
Darcy Carden. Thank you so much.
That's Darcy. Yep. I was like,
Thank you,
Darcy.
thank you. Because I was like, who is this? She's not on IMDb. So she's greeted by Aunt Phoebe. Commander Bell apparently has requested a new cloak, a new dress, new boots for his handmaid. And Aunt Lydia's like, wait a second, they're newlyweds. What do they need a handmaid for? It's apparently there's a newlywed period before a handmaid is assigned to a commander's household. And Phoebe informs her Janine was rescued from Jezebel's. Commander Bell wants her to be his handmaid, and Aunt Lydia is just overjoyed, right? Like, whether or not she wants her with Bell or not is another issue, but the fact that Janine is alive is all she needed to hear.
Well, that was the thing that I caught. I was like, she seems extremely happy, and I'm glad that, she's relieved. But I'm like, as soon as she said Commander Bell,
I'm
we're
like,
like, which was
uh-oh.
better? Which was worse, really? Like, let's think about it. So, yeah.
Yeah, she might have been better off along with the rest of the girls. So we actually do see Aunt Lydia go to attempt to visit Janine. She brings, the clothes to the Bell's home. Commander Bell answers the door. He takes the red suitcase from her and doesn't really appear to want to let her in. So Aunt Lydia is like, well, I really hope of Paul, because that's Commander Bell's name, Paul. I'm hoping she's adjusted well. And he's like, yeah, she's been adjusted all right. We've been adjusting her all morning. She's a firecracker. You know what that means, right? And so Aunt Lydia kind of understands what he's saying, right? She understands what's required. And so she's like, why? I hope to see her at the wedding. And Belle's like, yeah, she won't be ready to be seen in public. Sorry. Closes the door. Aunt Lydia realizes just how far the adjustment went. And so she turns to leave and she looks up and she sees Janine in the window. And you can see she's been. Like, they beat the crap out of her. Like, there's no other way around it. Her face is completely bruised, covered in bruises and blood. And Janine weakly waves, and Aunt Lydia waves back, but then she's like pulled violently from the window. It looks like it might have been Belle. So I
By
wish.
the wife.
Oh, was
Or
it the
no,
wife?
I thought it was the wife because she had that teal green,
Oh,
that
I.
seafoam kind of dress on.
Gotcha. Well,
And
someone
I
pulled her.
was, yeah, I was, and even Janine giving that little wave, she was like, yeah, this is where I am now,
This is my
and I'm gonna
reality.
figure it out, make the best, but this isn't unusual for me, and that is just so heartbreaking.
Yeah, she's been taken, sent back, taken, sent back, taken, sent back so many times. So I'm sure her mind is just, this is where I am, this is where I belong. Let me get on with it. So we go back to Mayday headquarters. June and Moira are speaking. I actually really love this scene.
Yeah.
She tells Moira she regrets trusting Nick. And Moira tells her, he never gave you a reason not to trust you. He was kind to you. If it weren't for him, you would be dead right now. And so June's like, well, that doesn't excuse what I did. And Moira says, yeah, but it's understandable. And she says, look, I'm gonna be honest with you. If I was at Jezebel's and there was a commander there that was willing to help me, I would love him too. Especially if he looked like Angelina Jolie. And June's like, what? Nick is nowhere near Angelina Jolie hot. Like, what are you talking about? And then she goes through like, okay, Sigourney Weaver and Aliens, and she says a bunch of different names, and she ends it up like, oh, what about Rihanna? And June's like, girl, what? Who are we talking about here? Like, Nick? No. So they kind of share a quiet laugh, and then June leaves to go talk to Luke. So I'll pause there for that scene.
I love that that is their relationship, that they understand how to kind of hold the other, where it's like, I'm not letting you off the hook because what you did is messed up. However, I'm not going to let you feel like crap for it. Because even though what you did was really messed up and like caused a lot of issues, it was understandable. I understand why you did it because I know you and because I love you.
Yeah.
And so by kind of approaching that with a little pithy humor, it's kind of like, okay, we're going to do this now to so that you know that we're cool, but I reserve the right to talk about this in the future for real, if necessary, you know, that kind of thing, which I really, that is one part of the relationship that I love. And I especially love that as long as things are copacetic with Moira, then June can talk to Luke. There's this little path that, and things have to be good with Moira. So that gives her the courage to go and say what needs to be said to Luke.
Yeah. So. And I do, you raise a good point. Luke, Moira, and June are kind of in like their own relationship together with each other. So it is interesting to see that dynamic. So she does go to talk to Luke. And as she approaches Luke, she's passed by Ellen. And of course, June tries to say like, Ellen. Ellen's like, nah, not trying to hear it, right? Walks off. So then she does go to Luke and she tells him like, I didn't realize how much I was hurting you, right? And he goes, well, I understand. She says, no, don't excuse my actions. I don't want you to be with me because you pity me or because you feel sorry for me. And he goes, like, well, what do you want? She's like, I want you to find someone that makes you happy. I want you to be with someone that is worthy of you. And then she was like, well, what do you want? And he goes, I should want to leave you, but I can't. And then she admits, I can't leave you either. And then he says, you know, I really, really miss her. I miss her so much, referring to Hannah. And so June says this thought out loud. Do you think she's the only reason why we're still together? And he quietly says, no, she's not the only reason. Right. So it's him saying like, it's okay. We're going to get through this. And they, you know, hold each other's hands. So they come once again back together. And maybe it doesn't close the chapter on Nick, but it at least it was finally acknowledged, right? Luke finally got it off his chest. I know you're in love with Nick. She's saying, I was in love with Nick. I know I shouldn't have been. They, you know, confessed their love for each other, the goal to get their daughter back, and knowing that they still want to be a family even after that. So I did like the cleanness of the scene.
What they have always given Luke credit for is that He does understand what happened to her. And he even though he doesn't like it, he understands why she feels the way she does for Nick. And he understands what Nick has done for her. Now, accepting that is kind of a different thing. But, you know, he's always kind of had that in him. So I think that this was a really great way for, like you said, for him to get it off his chest. I like when he said, I miss her so much. And like, yes, we know it applied to Hannah, but it also could have applied to June.
Yeah.
And that has always kind of been an issue with them, is that he's trying to get the June he knows back instead of accepting the June that she is now, because she has ultimately been forever changed by this experience, as someone would. And I think we're getting closer and closer to him not only recognizing that, because they had the conversation a few episodes ago, but actually accepting it and being like, you know, he said, I should want to leave you. But he's like, but I don't, you know. It's like he definitely loves her and they can definitely feel that love between them, even with Hannah missing.
Yeah.
And just knowing that once Hannah gets back, for them, of course, it'll kind of fill in those gaps.
Yeah, agreed.
And I thought it was a beautiful scene.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. So, you know, so they've reconciled. June's packing it up. She's hanging up her resistance spider flag. You know, she takes a moment. She sits on the edge of her cot. Tears run down her face. She's kind of realizing everything that's happened, right? Like there is those tears are relief. And also sadness. Now, a lot has happened to her in the last couple weeks. And then a car approaches and it's Lawrence and Tuello, and they get out. And Ellen threatens Lawrence and she's like, I should kill you. And he goes, well, we got Warhawks to kill. Go in peace. You know, she's like, I'm not taking orders from a commander of Gilead. And he's just like, yeah, go somewhere. And so he spots June at the window. He goes inside to talk to her and he's like, oh, you're packing up. And
real quick question. Real quick question before you keep going. Do we know that Lawrence was involved with them at all? Or was
Yes.
this the first time that we've seen him involved with the Mayday?
No, he's been he went there before, and it's we don't get to see it, but we do know that June or Moira communicated to them the fact that he's going to be working with them because the Warhawks wanted him dead. So I think it's known, even though it's explicitly shown on camera, that
But I
Lawrence is
mean,
helping.
that's new, right? Because Lawrence didn't know about the plan when they were at Jezebel's. Like, he wasn't a part of it. He didn't know anything about that. But we know that he is the one who got Mora back to, safety or wherever
Right.
she needed to go. So I'm guessing that that's when they hooked up. But
Yeah.
prior to that, they didn't have a relationship. It was pretty much Lawrence decided to get involved once he found out that they were gunning for him.
Right, yes. But we just
Okay.
don't happen to see, to your point, the ride back would have probably been when they all talked and they're like, okay, we got
Yeah.
this plan going.
Because
Yes.
he came in there just so comfortable, but then that's also a
But that's
Lawrence thing to
Lawrence.
do. So I was like, do y'all know each other? Okay.
That's Lawrence, he's gonna walk in like he owns the place. So, he's talking to June, and he's like, "You're packing it up." And I actually love what he says to her. He's like, "I always thought you were an idiot for trusting Nick." And June's like, "Well, you hired him." He's like, "Yeah, but I was very careful with the information that I gave that man. I wasn't moved by his smoldering gazes, you know." And she's
Died when you mentioned Smolder.
like, "With the smolder." And she's like, "What do you want? Why are you here?" And he's like, "I want you to do what you promised. I want you to get these people, rallied up. We got to kill some Warhawks." And she's like, "Look, my hands are tied. They don't want to hear from me. I'm going back. Like, I'm done with this." And then Lawrence kind of starts to bait her, right? He uses what he uses what he knows. And he goes, "Well, Serena never gave up." She's like, "Yeah, well, my chapter is closed. None of that happened, now that those girls are gone." He's like, "Well, Serena's given everything she wants. She's about to be the queen of Gilead. Or you, what you gonna do? Watch the wedding, from a trailer in Alaska while she's surrounded by handmaids that can't even meet her eye. Are you okay with that? And, this is your legacy." And she's like, "My legacy died with the women in Jezebel's." And so he tells her, "Well, Janine's alive." And June's like, "Okay." And he's like, she's with Belle now. She's like, "Well, I hope she kills him in his sleep." And then she goes, "Wait a second. Did you say handmaids would be at the wedding?" So that kind of gets her brain going. And so she ends up meeting with Mayday leadership. So they go through this plan. So before I get into that, did you want to talk about the scene with Lawrence and June?
Yes. Him bringing up Serena was everything. I screamed because I was like, he knew exactly what was going to really set her off. And she tried to play it off like, oh, so what? But that's why I said that scene at the beginning when she's looking at that view and she's looking at Serena's house and it's so pristine and beautiful and everything. And she was just like, I had to like get in the back of a truck for 6 hours with my baby and then, do all this flying and go through all this mess. And you're here living it up and getting what you always do. There is always going to be a part of June that needs to one up Serena, that needs to show her that she did not win. And I love that he definitely played to that. But then adding in Janine, which of course just sparks the next idea that we're going to talk about. But I thought it was so good.
Good on Lawrence. So she meets with the rest of Mayday leadership. Tuella and Lawrence are there as well. And she sells him on the idea of using the handmaids to infiltrate the wedding. They had nothing to do with Jezebel, so they're not going to be suspicious. They're going to fly under the radar. Serena is going to be inviting everybody into the wedding ring, everyone that they've wanted to target. She's going to micromanage everything to the T. So she's essentially laying out her plans for them to work around it. June and Moira will be hiding amongst the handmaids and they're going to smuggle weapons in. But then Ellen warns them they're not going to be able to be extracted until everything is done. And then Luca's like, "Look, we still have those bonds that we placed all around town. It would be a shame not to use them." And then Lawrence is like, "That chaos will be the perfect time to bring in the American military." So they also learn, or June kind of tells them, like, yes, security is going to be beefed up, but it's going to be focused on the wedding venue. Serena's going to call in people from all over. They're not going to be worried about the city of Boston. This is the perfect time to strike. So they do agree to the plan. And then June goes on to say they're going to recruit everyone who hates Gilead, who's ever been screwed over by Gilead. You know, while the commanders and their wives are, you know, so busy celebrating, eating cake, dancing, they're going to swoop in. And then we cut to Rita, who's been burned, right? And she's baking a cake, right? And she's, you know, doing a tasting with Serena. She's also going to be part of this plan. And then we cut to Lawrence, who pulls into the Red Center. He's greeted by a guardian, and he ends up meeting with Aunt Lydia. Apparently, she'll be traveling to DC that night, right? The night before the wedding, to meet with the Department of Human Reallocation. So they're trying to get her up out of there. Lydia, I mean, she's still a part of Gilead. And then we cut to Aunt Phoebe, who's walking towards Lawrence's car. And you're just like, what is she doing there? And then we cut back to Aunt Lydia, who's like, oh, I'm so pleased that you've thought of me, but I don't want to miss the wedding. He's like, well, you know, this is your only shot. The car's coming to get you. You're leaving tonight. And so as Aunt Phoebe's walking to the car, there's another guardian that's like, hey, do you need help with anything? And she's like, oh, I think I saw like a possum or something, or maybe a person. Who knows? Protect the girls. The guardian wanders off. And then she opens the trunk of Lawrence's car. There's June and Moira there. And for a second, I thought, is she going, you know, is she going to dine them out? And then she goes, blessed be the fruit. Let the resistance or let the revolution begin. And I was like, yeah. So I'll stop there.
Like, let's go. I was so happy. Now, I do wonder what kind of foil Aunt Lydia is gonna bring. I think that they're trying to send her away. I don't know that she's gonna go, but I also don't know that she's going to necessarily be a detriment to them, especially if she ends up talking with Janine beforehand. Like, they can't get Janine the plans, but I think as soon as she sees Janine, she's gonna be like, God dang it, you know, I have to get Janine out at the very least. So if their goal is to get people out, then I'll help as far as getting Janine out. I can't wait to learn more about
Aunt Phoebe.
Aunt Phoebe. Thank you. I was like, wait a minute. Aunt Phoebe, and you know how and why she's connected. I thought that that was such an interesting little thing to kind of throw in there, especially because I figured like she was trying to get them away from the car, but I thought it was because like, oh, well, why is the car of a commander here at night and that whole thing? And but then when she opened the trunk, I was like, oh, okay, here we go.
She knows.
Yeah, I'm really excited for the possibilities of what this can bring. And I love the way that they're setting this up to really just, ooh, it's a big plan. But if it works,
It works.
fantastic. But who's it? Ooh, so we'll see.
We'll see. Yeah, they're setting up the pieces real nicely. So, Phoebe smuggles June and Moira into the basement of the Red Center. Phoebe reassures June and Moira that the handmaids have all been prepped. The only one that has been prepped, obviously, is Janine because she's not allowed to attend the wedding and she's kind of sequestered at the bells. So she doesn't know what's going
Kidnapped.
on. So June volunteers. She's like, you know what? I'll take care of it. I'll get her. I got to take care of Belle anyway. It's on me. And then Phoebe nods and goes back upstairs, but then she runs into somewhat suspicious Aunt Lydia, who's like, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, I got turned around. I was trying to find a bucket and mop because I spilled tea. And Aunt Lydia's like, okay, well, you know, I'm going to DC tonight. I really would hate to leave the girls, but can you please take care of them? And Aunt Phoebe's like, I promise, and you know, rushes off. So down in the basement,
Oh,
you know,
wait. Before she rushes off, though, we get that look back from Aunt Lydia, like,
Like something's up.
And ooh, we'll see where that goes because I know that wasn't my mistake.
No, absolutely not. But yeah, so that we head down to the basement, and you know, June is trying to give Moira a pep talk. She tells her they're there for Janine, all the women they've lost, and all the women that they need to save. And Moira's like, can you tell me something leader-y? Like, can you hype a girl up?
Leaderly.
So, June begins to quote Psalm 23, which is the Lord is my shepherd, thou shalt not want, the whole thing. So she goes through the entire prayer, but she modifies it at the end and says, "And please, dear God, give us the strength to murder those goddamn mother effers." To which Moira says, "A effin' men." And that's how the episode ends.
Woof, my goof. It is about to be on.
Yes,
It's going to
it
be very exciting. I know these next few episodes are going to be tense. One thing that drives me crazy is like if there's too much tension, I'm like, ah, it's like
is.
little crumb, But I'm ready for it. I want to see something positive happen. Now, this is where we kind of have when I talked with Bruce, the creator on the carpet, I was asking about the testaments and is this something that leads into the testaments? And he really tried to make it clear, like Handmaids tells its own thing, testaments is its own thing. So depending on the ending of this, it might not. So if you're reading the testaments, that might not be the ending of Handmaid's Tale. And so that gives me hope because I'm like, maybe they'll do like a nice, happy, ending. Or, maybe they'll go like hyper realistic and then it'll just be awful. You don't know which way they're gonna go. So I'm excited to find out.
I do think there's some connective tissue just from reading the testaments and watching what they're laying out. So I know it's they're going to be separate, but I do feel like they have to connect in some form of another. So I kind of see how it could probably get translated to the testaments. I also will say from reading the original book, we know that Gilead doesn't go down easily. And that it takes a while for it to collapse. So let's say this plan is successful. In my experience with regimes, when the head of one snake is cut off, three more appears. So,
Now, but maybe four.
yeah, so that's why, even if in my mind we could get the happy ending for the handmaids, but then obviously it has to be around for the testaments to continue. So that's what I'm taking away from it. But yeah, I will say, as someone that did watch the next episode, that it is a doozy. It is a full on ride. So I cannot wait to discuss it next
All right.
week. But until then, we'll leave you with, blessed be the fruit. May the Lord open, and we will talk to you guys next week.
See
Bye.
you next time. Bye.
The Black Girl Nerds podcast is produced by Jamie Broadnax. The opening theme song to our show is written and performed by Samus. Various instrumentals are performed by Samus, Sky Blue, and Shubzilla. You can find various episodes of the Black Girl Nerds podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Audioboom, Google Play Music, and Spotify.